Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com or also on BitChute and YouTube. And I have four other podcasts, the Awakening Podcast, Learn Polish Podcast, Meditation Podcast, and Crypto Podcast, and all can be found on roycon.com. Today, my guest in Denver, Colorado, please welcome Michael Unbroken.
What is up, my friend? How are you today?
I'm wonderful. And I've done a lot of research on you, but I know it's probably better that you let the listeners know who's Michael.
Yeah, well, you know, today I'm an author, speaker, coach, and podcast host, and I've fortunately been able to work with hundreds of thousands of people around the world to help them do that thing that's most difficult, and that's learning to love ourselves, to let go of the past, and to ultimately be the hero of our own story. And so it's been very much my journey that has led me to this moment, as it happens for most people. And it's just an honor to be able to get to serve folks and help make the world a better place.
Yeah, excellent. So I suppose I want to go down the speaking journey. There's a lot of things that I want to cover, but I suppose we better let the listeners know, where did the Unbroken come from?
Yeah. So I'll take a couple of minutes. I'll tell you the backstory, because I think context is everything, right?
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in America. My mother was a drug addict and an alcoholic. In fact, she actually cut off my right index finger when I was 4 years old. And, you know, hurt people. It was a continuation of trauma and abuse. And she married my stepfather when I was six, and he was super abusive. He put my brother and I in the hospital multiple times. And, you know, we spent the majority of our childhood homeless and deeply in poverty. I mean, I lived with 30 different families between 8 to 12 years old, getting bounced around from place to place to place. And when my grandmother adopted me, I was 12. This is important. I'm biracial. I'm black and white. I'm actually West Nigerian and Irish. And my grandmother was a very racist old white lady from a town you never heard of. So imagine this identity crisis that starts to happen. And this is growing up in the 80s and 90s. It's a very different world than we live in now, you know? And I started doing drugs when I was 12 years old. It was pills and weed and all those things. And I started getting drunk when I was 13, and I got kicked out of school. And they basically were like, we don't want you here. And so I was running the streets, breaking into houses, stealing cars, was getting shot at by the police. And my life was very, very chaotic for a long time. And luckily I got put into this last chance program to try to graduate high school. Still did not. I did not get a degree. They basically handed it to me. They said, you got to get the hell out of here. We are done with you. And so I'm trying to figure out my life. I'm trying to figure out the solution for abuse, for poverty, for homelessness. And Roy, I thought it was money. You know, I think a lot of us go to money and we're like, that's the solution, right? But, you know, I was looking at my life, said, I want to make $100,000 a year legally. Cause I thought $100,000 was like the window. You know what I mean? It's like, that's where everything gets better. And the legal part was important because I've been in handcuffs multiple times. I have family in prison for life. And as of today, my three best friends have been murdered. Like, I knew where I was going, man. I knew where I was going. And so I said to myself, all right, let me get my shit together. Let me get my life together and see if I can make this happen. Well, fast forward a couple of years, I land a job with a Fortune 10 corporate company here in America, one of the biggest companies on planet Earth. And it was amazing. I started making all that money and my life became a disaster. By the time that I was 25, I was 350 pounds, which is like 125 kilos. I'm smoking 2 packs a day and drinking myself to sleep. And my life was a disaster. I had all this money, but I had no love, no compassion, no empathy. My friendships were awful. My physical health, my brothers told me to stop talking to them. You know, it was chaos because I was numbing all the abuse by getting drunk and by getting high and by having sex with strangers and by doing like this crazy stuff, man. I look back and I go, why? That's nuts. I can't believe I did that. And the next day after having this, the worst night of my life, I'm laying in bed. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, you got to get your shit together. And I walked in the bathroom and I remember I was looking at myself in the mirror. I remember being 8 years old and the water company had come and turned our water off. Now, they would turn off our water, our electricity, our heat in the winter. We would get evicted. Like, this was always happening. And this one day, I go in the backyard, and keep in mind, I'm a little boy. I'm 8 years old. I take this little bucket, and I walk across the street to our neighbor's house, and I turn on the water on the side of their house. And for the first time in my life, I stole water. And I remember saying, like, when I'm a grown-up, this won't be my life. And so as I'm looking in this mirror, having this memory, I realized that I'd broken the promise I made to myself as a little kid. I wasn't keeping my promise. And because of that, I said, what are you willing to do to have the life that you want to have? And the answer was no excuses, just results. And Roy, what that meant in that moment was like, I'm not going to negotiate with myself anymore. I'm not going to let myself down. I'm not going to be the victim, you know, which we all are so good at doing. And I'm going to start taking care of myself. And, you know, almost 11 years later, here I am talking to you.
No, very deep and a hurtful childhood. I know you're helping others do the same. I've had not the same journey as yours, obviously, a very harsh journey that you've went through, but I've lost everything. And I remember at a time retelling the story of what happened was actually having an effect on me, and I was able to get out of that. And I can see by you talking, you've obviously been able to do that as well. Can you try to help others? Because there's some people reliving the story, whether it was abuse, whether it was made homeless, whatever. Does everybody's got a journey? But I think the most important thing is that we can make the shift, because I think we're poisoning the cells inside us when we're repeating it, if it's hurting us again. We have to make that pivotal jump.
Yeah. Oh, well, Roy, that's a phenomenal point, man. And I think that I know that the only way that you get there is that you absolutely must be willing to address this. You know, if you try to hide from it, if you try to run from it, if you try to pretend you're okay, it's going to keep coming up. And then, you know, people think that the way that you handle this is you tell your wife or your husband or your best friend over beers. That is not how this works. I promise you, that's not going to get it done. You have to have the emotional and mental support of professionals to get through this. And the reason why I say this is because, like, dude, I tried to do this on my own. The first few years I was like really in this journey of healing, like I just tried to do everything by myself, and it just doesn't work. Like, it just does not work, because I never had anyone to bounce ideas off of. I never had anyone to hold me accountable. I never had anyone to be like, hey, have you thought about this? And so, you know, I think therapy is obviously kind of the go-to, people will say, but I'm actually going to say something different. If I were to start my journey over, like if I were to go back 11 years ago, I have this moment, I'm like, it's time for me to get my life together. I would have hired a coach first. I would have hired someone to teach me, because here's the thing, Roy, I didn't know how to take care of myself. I didn't know how to take care of my money. Like, I was making six figures and I was tremendously in debt, right? I was hugely overweight. I was smoking. I had no accountability in my life. I had no goals. I had no values. I had nothing. And so, you know, I often think to myself that really the best thing that one can do in the beginning of this process is, you know, get a coach, get yourself out of bed, get yourself out of the environment you're in, get and go through this process of changing your behavioral patterns, start changing your mindset, start changing the way that you think about these things. And so this aspect of growth is about the willingness to be vulnerable enough to recognize that you need help. And so many of us just simply say, nah, I got it. Especially men, you know this, Roy. And that to me is so dangerous, because if you're over here just saying, oh, I got it, you're in deep trouble. You have no idea how much trouble you're in when you say that. And so the next part of it is obviously therapy, right? Go find a therapist, go and make meaning. In my personal opinion, I will not speak for everyone. In my personal opinion, I believe that therapy is about taking all that stuff from the past, making meaning of it, creating causation and correlation in your mind, having an understanding, and then putting it on the shelf so you can move forward with your life. you know, people will be in therapy for 4, 5, 7, 12 years. And I'm like, I don't think it's working. You might want to try something else, you know? So I, you know, for a long time, I did all the modalities. Name a modality of therapy. I did it. Gestalt, CBT, EMDR, trauma-informed, group, men's group. I did it all, right? And I was just always trying to learn, always trying to understand. And I think the third aspect of this is the education. You have to be willing to educate yourself on these things because realistically, I think the greatest, I remember this distinctly, the moment that of like this major pivot in my life, I came across this research study called the ACE survey, the Adverse Childhood Experiences Survey. It was done in the 90s by Dr. Felitti, the California Center for Disease Control and Kaiser Permanente. And what he laid out in this study of over 18,000 people was this direct correlation between childhood trauma and long-term detrimental health ramifications. And we're talking about, like, depending on where you fell into this study, you could be 5,200% more likely to commit suicide, 2,200% more likely to smoke, 2,000% more likely to be an alcoholic. And then not to mention things like heart attacks, pulmonary embolisms, asthma, cancer, diabetes, like all these things tied into child abuse, right? And the reason why is because you grow up in this fight or flight, you grow up in this cortisol state, and your body never gets to rest, digest, recover, and ultimately like heal. And so if you're always in that state, your body's always fighting for survival. And so all the other systems start to break down. And so I'm sitting here watching this. I'm like, damn, that makes a lot of sense. And so if you're in this position in your life where you're like, all right, I know something's wrong. I need to go to whatever it takes to get this thing done, to go to what's next in my life. I think you need to get a coach, a therapist, and start educating yourself about abuse.
Definitely. And like, I've seen, I think it's like 10 qualifications for coaching that you've done. You've done the whole lot, which means that you're serious, because I know I've discussed it with some of my guests on, and I know some people go away, pay 10 bucks to get a coaching certificate. And then there's others like yourself that actually go down the route. So where we might just touch on, because one, I know, unfortunately, some of the therapists are, they get the customer for life. And instead of, because there's ones that are truly, they're there for mankind, they want to help. And I think this kind of touches on the coaches, but both are definitely, you know, of benefit, especially, you know, when people go through serious trauma.
You know, I think that, you know, even from my standpoint, the education came into play, because I realized, like, if I want to help myself, I need to learn from experts. And I've kind of always been, really my whole life, the person who's willing to say, I don't understand. In context, right? It would depend on the context. When it came to asking for help, though, I was always the last one to ask for help. But saying I don't understand, and maybe that was just me playing a trick in my own brain. And so, you know, what happened was I realized, like, I needed to educate myself. And I had no, let me put it this way, Roy. If 6 years ago, you'd be like, Michael, you're going to be coaching people, I'd be like, you are out of your damn mind. And I had so many people, man, it was crazy. And it still happens every day, messaging me. They're like, hey, can you coach me? Can you help me? Can you teach me? And I'm like, I'm just trying to do this myself, man. I don't know how to help you. And I realized that the way that you help people is simply by guiding based on what you know. Like, I think I'm just one step ahead of my clients, right? And the people that coach me, they're just one step ahead of me. And so I look to them for help, and my clients look to me for help. And then it becomes this beautiful circle where everyone's doing the same thing. And I think the education aspect of it, you know, I have over 30 trauma-informed education certifications, right? I've worked with Pete Walker and Bessel van der Kolk and Gabor Mate and all the Anna Lampe, like the leaders in this space in the world on planet Earth, right? Not to mention, like, my coaches are Tom Bilyeu and Tony Robbins and Grant Cardone, people I work with intimately who have, like, helped me create this life. And I think that if you are there's the old saying, coaches should have coaches. And I think that if you're in this life and you're trying to help people, but you're not getting educated by others, you're doing a huge disservice to people. And so, you know, people will go, oh, you got all the qualifications. To be honest with you, Roy, I'd rather work with somebody who has the real world experience, but has built a platform and built something that is, you know, proprietary to them, because a lot of people just take, you know, all their coaching stuff and, you know, they break this down, it's white label, they put a new sticker on it and they go, it's mine. That's not how Think Unbroken works. Everything I've created is from scratch. So, you know, that's one of the things I think is interesting about this whole business. But, you know, the truth be told, you know, I don't care who you get coached by, as long as it's not your family, as long as it's not your wife or husband, it's not your best friend, go, if even the first person you pay to coach you is like $50 an hour, do it, because you need that. You need that right now. And I think so many people miss the mark on it.
Excellent. And like I know you're not getting your message out and everything, but a lot of it comes back to the, like, the public speaking. And I came across, because I was watching a few different things that you'd put out, and I believe you got involved with Toastmasters. You might let me know your kind of speaking journey. Was that the first time that you kind of got confident, or how did that come about?
That's it. No one's ever asked me that question before. That's a great question. So I actually started becoming a public speaker by doing stand-up comedy. I knew that I wanted to speak on big stages, and I thought to myself, what is the most difficult kind of public speaking? And it's stand-up comedy. Yeah. It really truly is. And so for the first couple of years, as I was just kind of like, I don't know, meandering about the world, I just started doing comedy all the time. I'd do 3-4 sets a week. I would go get on. Some people would laugh, some people wouldn't. And like, you kind of learn, you learn stage presence. You learn how to be under bright lights. You learn how to do those things. And then what happened is I started doing Toastmasters, and I started doing kind of like these ad libs, and I started doing improv. And then I got a speaking coach, right? And then I had someone train me and help me figure out how to put this thing together. And then it was just, it's taken off. And, you know, man, I've spoken in front of 4 people. I've spoken in front of 10,000 people. And the truth is, it's kind of all the same. It's my happy place, dude. It's where I feel like the most fired up about life. And, but it's just, I practice what I preach. I could not be good at this without having a coach, without having a plan, without having a mindset built to it, and without doing the work. Cause you weren't there when I did my first workshop and 3 people showed up, right? You know what I mean? You weren't there when I had my first book release party and 9 people came, right? And you know, that's what people think. They're like, oh man, I saw you on Grant Cardone's stage, and I saw you at Tom Bilyeu, or, you know, I saw you with, you know, Roy, man, you're crazy. Like, I'm like, yeah, but you didn't see the first 7 years. Right? You didn't see the hardship. And that's, I apply that. I think about that, about this journey as well, as like, you know, what happens behind the scenes is so important in this journey. You've got to be willing to show up for yourself every day, because if you don't believe in yourself, nobody's going to. And to me, I spent all this time just trying to build confidence, and confidence comes through the continuation of consistently doing hard things. You cannot build confidence by doing something one time. Honestly, I've probably been on 300 podcasts. You know what I mean? I've written 3 books, and they're still not good. You know what I mean? Cause I'm still like learning. You know, I've spoken on hundreds of stages. I'm still not good. I'm learning, but it's the consistency, right? It's the consistency that builds confidence. And that's the thing I want people to take from this, because they're like, you know, oh, I'll go to therapy one time, my life will be better. No, you won't. You go to therapy and coaching 2 times, your life will be better. Nope, sorry. People are like, I'm going to read a book, you know, and I'm like, maybe you should read that book 10 times, because I don't think you got it yet. You know what I mean? And so it's just, it's consistency is going to get that. So Toastmasters was huge for me early on, because, you know, I was full of the us, buts, ands, does, right? And it took me a long time to make cognizant meaning of all the things in real time, because I think it just made you fast, right? I'd be like, boom, boom, boom. I'd be able to handle things quickly. And, you know, there were little contests. I would just keep winning and winning and winning and winning. And that's because I would just study this. I became studious about it. And that's the thing I want people to understand, is you want to be great at something, get studious about it.
Absolutely. I remember with the Toastmasters, because I got to a certain level with the competitions. And then what I did is I found out what was the judge's criteria and made sure that I incorporated all of that into the speech. It's not exactly how I like doing a speech, because I'm more about the, you know, the message. But if you want to be winning the Toastmasters competition, you have to know what you're going to be judged on and make sure that you cover every point that they're going to be, you know, giving you points for.
Yeah. Know the rules of the game. Exactly. Like, I think that's such an important thing, Roy. I'm glad you brought that up, because like, if you think about life, there are no rules for this game. And so if you want to go on this journey, you've got to create the rules. You know, you have to be the one who creates your values, who creates your wants, needs, and interests, your personal boundaries. You have to define your moral character. Ultimately, you know, I think about who I am today, and this person, this Michael sitting here having this conversation with you, is a realization of an idea of the person I thought I could be when I took a pen and I sat down and I wrote myself. I said, this is who I am. And so if you want to play the game, you know what? Define the rules. You get to choose that. But in other contexts, you know, read the rules of the game. And my friends know I'm such a stickler for the rules. If you don't play the game by the rules, I'm going to not play the game with you, because I want to beat you, because I'm super competitive. Like, I want to win. I will win. But I want to win fairly, right? Well, as fair as possible anyway.
And like with the comedy, because I enjoy, I've done an open mic, but I incorporated a lot in my kind of Toastmaster speeches through comedy. I enjoy that more. Like, on stage, it's a lot different. Like, did you have hecklers, and how did you deal with that? And also then following up to that into the speaking, because with the grant, like being able to kind of modify, you know, accommodate different changes because of that competition. You were supposed to have 5 minutes and it dropped to two. So you might kind of lean into that conversation a little, because that's actually an interesting story.
Yeah, man, you've definitely done your research. I appreciate that. What I will say about it is you do something repetitiously. You do something so often that you become prepared. And through becoming prepared, you're able to handle anything that comes up. When I first started doing stand-up, here's what's interesting. The very first time I did it, it was at an open mic at this place called Helium in Portland, Oregon. Now, Helium is one of the best comedy clubs in America. And I'd been to the open night many times because I love stand-up comedy. It's actually one of my favorite things. And I went in there, put my name on the list. Normally there's 40 people in the room, maybe 50 on a big night. For whatever reason, dude, that place was packed. There was like 150 people in that room that night, and I have to go first. And it was really actually serendipitous, because I love going first. I always tell people, if you can go first, go first. It's like ripping the Band-Aid off. Just get it over with. Just go. And as soon as I'm up there, like, I'm going through my set, and this woman starts heckling me. And I was like, all right, I know how to handle this. And so I just like threw it back to her. And that's kind of this interesting analogy for life, because you're always going to get heckled. There's always going to be a roadblock. There's always going to be that thing that's unexpected, that if you are prepared for, because you have done the work, you will be able to navigate. And so you asked me about Grant Cardone. So for those who don't know Grant Cardone, he's this eccentric billionaire real estate playboy, right? Married to his wife, Lena. They're my mentors. They're amazing, amazing human beings. He's actually a business partner of mine. He invested into Think Unbroken when I did this speaking gig for him. And it was this huge stage. It was virtual, but it was 10,000 people. You could see all the names, all the rooms, just, oh my God, it was crazy number of people watching. And I get the opportunity to pitch Think Unbroken as a business investment. It's kind of like Shark Tank, but more pressure, right? And we're in the green room, and I know we're getting ready to go on stage. Grant's up there, he's chatting, his team's up there, they're basically laying out the groundwork for this competition that's about to go down. And this woman, and she's a friend, she knows I tell this story. This woman goes, well, good luck, guys, but I already won. And I was like, you are out of your damn mind. You are not even going to be close to beating me. You see, Roy, because I had already visualized victory so many times that it was impossible that I wasn't going to win. I'd willed it into the universe because I had written down in my notebook hundreds of times for that previous month that I'm going to win this competition. Hundreds of times. I closed my eyes. I had seen it. I'd visualized being on the stage, going through the pitch, doing my 5 minutes, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And the day of, I reached out to a friend for help, my friend Russ, who had actually won the year prior and gotten an investment and became business partners with Grant. And I called Russ. I said, dude, I need your help. Here's where I'm at. I think I got it, but I think I'm missing something. Help me. And he goes, yeah, dude, I'll help you. And then I asked his wife, Emily, to help me too. And at the end of the conversation, he goes, do you know how many people have ever asked me for help since I won and got that investment? I go, God, 200, right? Thinking like a ton of people must have. He goes, two, you and one other guy. And I'm like, all right, well, shit, that gives me advantage, doesn't it? And so we're in the screen room. She says this. She goes, well, good luck to you guys, but I already won. And I'm like, you're so wrong. You have no idea that you're about to get hit by a semi truck. Because, right, I'm super competitive, but also, like, I already decided I won. One of the things about life you have to understand is you can create the world that you want to live in. You have the ability to bend the world to you. Everyone's always bending to the world. They're like, oh, I need to placate. I need to be someone else so I fit in. I'm like, fuck that. The world needs to bend to me. This is my world. This is my existence, right? And so we get up on stage, we're ready to go, and Grant just being Grant, doing what he does, man. He goes, in real life, you don't get 5 minutes to talk about your business. Sometimes you don't even get 10 seconds because you're in an elevator. And you can see his team being like, oh, we planned this, don't do this. They're like, you could see their faces. And he goes, well, you know what? You guys are going to get 2 minutes. Let's see who's really ready. And you could just see people freak out. And if you watch the video, it's on my website. I'm calm. I'm looking right at the camera. And he goes, who wants to go first? I raise my hand so fast, Roy, this damn shoulder comes out of socket. Because he goes, who wants to go first? And I go, I want to go first. I want to go first. And he goes, he said something really interesting to me. And it pissed me off right as we're about to go on. He goes, you know, sometimes people think they're ready until they're under the big lights. I was like, Grant, you don't know me, motherfucker. You have no idea what I am. Not intimidated by you or these 10,000 people watching, because I have done this so many times. I've already decided I won. And so I go first. I crush it. He does a mic drop, literally. Exactly, yeah. I knew I won. I knew whatever was next did not matter because I knew I was going to win. And honestly, it's kind of like a disaster watching the people follow me. It was pretty rough. But you know what? That's because they had not prepared as much as me. The most prepared person will always win, right? Because what did I say? Consistency over time by doing hard things builds confidence. I had done that speech in my head 5 million times. And so when it came down to, okay, I got 5 minutes. Wait, no, I got 2 minutes. Fine. I already have this. I know this in and out, up and down, top to bottom. So put me on the stage, put me under the lights, let me go and execute what I know I need to do. This comes back to what I said. If you don't believe in yourself, who will? And I don't care who could. I mean, the greatest speakers in the world could have been in that room with me, and some of them were, but they weren't going to win. And so when you are in all of life, you have to recognize the truth. There's always going to be a roadblock. There's always going to be that thing that gets in your way. There's always going to be that person that says, no, you're not good enough. You're not strong enough. There's always going to be that thing that can trip you up where you're like, oh, I had it all planned out. It's like Mike Tyson says, you know, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. But I think about what Bruce Lee says. Bruce Lee says, don't ask for an easy life. Ask for the tools to handle a difficult one. And so when you go through this process of everything, learning day in and day out, you're building the tools so that when you're under the big stage and the big lights are on you and the pressure is on and then suddenly everything shifts, you'll be able to handle it.
absolutely. And like the mental bit as well, because when somebody says, I'm going to win this, that can actually throw a few people off. There's some people that can't accept the hair or something like that. You know, it wouldn't bother me, but I know that. And that's why she's doing it. She shouldn't do something like that. When somebody throws that out, they're basically trying to, you know, use the psychological thing. And the same with Grant, because he doesn't want to be, you know, giving his money to somebody that's not tough enough. And by throwing that at you, that could have thrown you off, but it didn't. You know, you had the strength and you didn't get that strength that day. You got that strength on your journey.
Yeah. Months and months and months and years and decades of building resiliency. And look, people will play mind games with you. I don't care. Bring it on. I promise you're not mentally tougher than I am. You're just not. And again, I think that's, dude, I'm just super competitive, but I'm competitive with myself first. Like I'm not comparing my journey to your journey. I'm not comparing what you do to what I do. I'm going and I'm looking in the mirror. Did I do the work? Did I show up? Did I do everything in my power to be successful? Most people cannot answer those questions truthfully. You know, you left stuff on the table. You know, you didn't go as hard as you could. You know, you did not do everything in your power to be obsessed with being the victor. And then you lose and you blame other people. Dude, if I would have lost that day, which I didn't, but if I would have, I would not have been mad at anyone. I would not have blamed anyone. I would have sat there in the knowing that I did everything I could. I rehearsed it a million times. I journaled it. I visualized it. I created it. I called for help. I sat there. I did everything, right? And if I would have lost, I would have been okay with that because I would have put in the work. The problem is people lose, they didn't put in the work, and then there's always a fucking excuse. You cannot make excuses for your life. You cannot, for anything, for this healing journey, for relationships, for business, for love, nothing. You cannot make excuses. Because if you're looking for the excuse to make, you already lost. I'm looking for the solution. I'm looking for the way to make this thing work. And that means, it means a lot of different things, but ultimately it means like showing up for yourself and being like, I'm going to do what I said I was going to do. I said I was going to win. I'm going to win. I said I was going to write a book a year till I die. I'm finishing my third book. Fourth book's about to get started. I said I'm going to have a number one podcast in the world. I said I'm going to release a show every single day. I said I'm going to coach people on Tuesday nights for free. I said I'm going to get up and go to the gym at 5:30 in the morning. I said that I'm going to do all these things about my life. And I don't negotiate with my dreams. So when the time comes and it's on the line and it's time for you to do that thing you said you're going to do, are you going to do it or not? Because look, if you're not going to do it and you're going to complain about it and you're going to blame the world and you're going to say, well, I'm a victim and this is how my life is, and you're going to point fingers at everybody else but yourself, you should shut the hell up because it's on you. And look, this gets me in trouble all the time. I'm going to get an email from somebody listening to this right now. I promise you for what I'm about to say. Someone's going to email. I guarantee it. Happens every single time. I don't care about your past. My job as a coach is to not be your friend. I am not here to be your friend, Roy. I'm here to coach you. I'm here to push you. I'm here to show you the obstacles in the way, give you the game plan, the roadbook, and help you navigate it to go and win your championship, right? You're on the pitch. You're ready to go. You're playing winger. I'm coach. Run the damn play. And if you don't run the play and you complain and you blame everybody else in the world, it is your fault that your life sucks. That's the God honest truth. It's your fault. Now, look, this isn't culpability. It's not your fault that bad things happened to you as a kid. Let's be very clear about that, because people will go, yeah, but my childhood was so bad. I go, yes, I understand that. What does that have to do with today? Because today you're no longer a child. And that means that you have to be willing to go and do the work. You've got to go to therapy, get the coach, read the books, get educated, do the hard inner dialogue. Because today you have to make choices and decisions that propel you forward. And it's a hard battle, dude, I promise you. Because I didn't have this like 180 and suddenly my life was great. I mean, it took me, the first 3 years of this journey were so difficult because all I kept doing was falling down, failing, losing, hurt. Like, it just sucked, man. The first 3 years were so painful. And then it got a little bit easier. And then it got a little bit easier. Then it got a little bit easier because I kept building confidence. I kept taking care of myself. I kept learning new tools, new ways to think about myself and the world. And what happened was, now today, it's like, it's not that it's not hard, because it's still hard. It's just a different hard. It's a different level. It's a different accountability, a different amount of effort required. And that's the thing. Start where you are. You're not me. You're not Roy. You're maybe you're just starting this journey. Or maybe you're like me and you were 3 years in and it wasn't really taking shape. That's okay. As long as you keep going forward, because consistency over time equals confidence. And that's the thing people have to understand and take away from this, right? Everything that's going to happen in your life, you don't actually have control of. Like, believe it or not, you don't have as much control as you think you do. While simultaneously, this is the weird juxtaposition, while simultaneously having full control over everything. That's what's so fascinating about this experience. Control what you can control and let go of what you can't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just finally, I suppose the podcast, because you said you wanted to be in the top podcasting. I know you've, I don't know, I've written those over 200 episodes anyway. So you might tell me, you know, I know you've interviewed Tom, and, you know, I didn't see all the list of all the other ones, but you've obviously, you know, got a high caliber guests as well coming on your show.
Yeah. So I think we're at like, we're almost at 300, I think. I think we do 300 this week. I don't know. I go like this. I give it to the team. I let them do it. I sat down at the end of last year and I made a goal for myself. I want to have the number one podcast in the mental health space, personal development. That's what I want. I want the number one show in the world. As of last Monday, we were number 42. So we're getting there, right? We're getting there. But I said to myself, I'm going to do an episode every single day, 365 damn episodes. Even though I've been doing this show for 4 years, I said, I'm going to do it anyway. 365 episodes. Let's go, baby. And the reason why was because I want people to learn everything I'm learning. Like, everything I teach, everything I teach is for free there, because I want people to, like, my mission is not money. It's not success. It's not fame. It's to end generational trauma. It's to give people tools to change their life forever. And that's what I want. That's what I desire in this journey. And so the podcast becomes this channel. It's a vertical in the business, of course, but, you know, it's this channel to share not only my tools, but have experts come on. And so we've had Tom Bilyeu and Anna Lamke and John Lee Dumas and Jordan Harbinger and Tim Story and Kelly Gores and Felipe Duyon. And like, the list goes on and on and on of these amazing, amazing people have been on the show who, you know, I just kept reaching out. And like, this is a testament again to controlling your world. Do you know how many times I've been told no by some of the people that have been on my show? Like, you
probably same as me, because you have the same kind of mindset. I've had so many amazing guests on the show. I don't accept no, to be honest. I go in with the mindset they're going to benefit from being on my show.
100%. I won't say who, but there's a person who came on my show who I love dearly, who told me no probably 30 times. Literally. I probably should go look at all the emails, all the text messages. I got his phone number. He's like, no, not right now. It's not the right time. So what does that have to do with anything? What do you mean? Not the right time. And let's get it scheduled. Let's go. And so, you know, you have to be driven. Like, you cannot accept no's. Look, context, obviously, right? But you have to be willing to say, I'm going to get what I want no matter what. No matter what. You have to be driven towards it. You have to be obsessed with it. And so for me, it's like, I bring these people on because I want to learn. I want to learn from the best minds on planet Earth. I want to learn from amazing people. I want to learn from people who have been where I want to go. And so when I get a billionaire on, or a New York Times bestselling author, or, you know, a famous celebrity in a space, I'm like, yes, I get to learn. I have a list called my Dream 100, the 100 guests that I want to have on my show. All of them are telling me no all the time. Every single one of them will be on this show unless they die before they get on, or I die. So every single one, because I'm not going to negotiate with it. No to me is not no. No is like, well, I haven't given you enough information to say yes. So what do I got to do to get you on? Does it take being the number one show to get these people? Probably. So I got to have the number one show. You know what I mean? Does it take having a bigger name? Probably. So I need to have a bigger name. And it's about the continuation, just building the confidence and showing people that it's a benefit to them. Because like, you have to think about this, man. If you just started and you've got somebody like crazy famous or whatever, they're not going to come on your show. Don't be stupid. Like, you got to earn
it.
That.
It did for me. I was on my, I had a few podcasts, but they didn't know it when I wrote, but I got David Icke on my 9th episode of the Awakening podcast. And everybody
that's
was
amazing.
Like, yeah. And it's like, I think it's just having a belief system that you just kind of, I have a very high success rate. I don't think I've anybody's refused me, to be honest with you. I just,
yeah. And you just keep going. Yeah. Right, you just keep building it
and
out.
If they
keep
do say no, it means no, as you said, you know, like if somebody, I learned that from construction and real estate and sales and everything. If basically somebody has to tell me to feck off, if that means stop calling, if they don't say that, I monthly come back to people for the real estate or whatever business that I'm working, they will tell you, hey, stop contacting me. But if they don't, it means they're, and I've had people thank me for following up with them when they eventually invest or do something.
Yeah, 100%, man. And you know, and there's funny, one person came to mind that I emailed them. They'd be like, message me in 6 months. 3 weeks later, I emailed them again. Message me in 6 months. Okay, cool. 3 weeks later, I sent them a text, right? Again and again. Like, and to me, it was like, I realized that some people will hear this and they'll be like, why would you do that? Why would you not respect their boundaries? Because it's like, I'm trying to make the world a better place and their boundary about an email is not going to stop me from doing that. You know what I mean? People get so shut down by a no. And we live in this weird society culturally in the world where people just accept no and their dreams are crushed the first time, man. Man, think about this. You're going to let a no be in the way of your dreams? You're going to let somebody else determine whether or not your dreams come true. Do you not see how far-fetched that is? How crazy that is? Like, you're going to have to shoot me dead in the street before I stop chasing my dreams, right? I tell people all the time, I'll give up anything. I'll give up anything except my dreams. I'm not going to do it. So, you know, when people tell me no to be on a stage or, you know, so you know how many people told me no when I wrote my first book? All of them, literally everyone. I've got all the emails. Every single person told me no. And I've made that book a number one best-selling book. Don't let people tell you no. Don't accept it. Refuse it. Because, you know, the truth about it is nobody cares about your dreams. Hate to break it to you. Nobody cares. Your kids don't care about your dreams. Your wife doesn't care about your dreams. Hell, your business partner doesn't care about your dreams. Right? And so you have to recognize the truth that you're the one who has to put in the effort and the energy every day. And it is only through that, that you're going to get what you want. And I want people to be able to follow the truth that they have inside of them, but you've got to be fearless. You've got to be okay with rejection. Like that's like, if you're not okay with being rejected, man, you're in trouble. Damn, you're in trouble. And I've been told I've been rejected 10 million times. And it doesn't bother me anymore. In the beginning, it did. I'm like, oh, God, they said no. Oh, no. My life is so bad. They said no. And now I'm like, great. So when do you want to do it? And that's true of everything. Because, look, there is no Disney moment. People are sitting around waiting. They're just hoping and praying their dreams are going to come true. You have to make your dreams come true. And that's what I hope people understand about this is it's like, I don't know anything you don't know. I really, truly don't. I just put in a little bit more work than most people. You know, and people look at me and they'll go, dude, you're a workaholic. You work so much. And I'm like, it ain't working if I love it. And, you know, you rewind a couple hundred years ago, you know, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, those guys worked on Sunday. And you're talking about weekends? Do you want your dream or not? What do you want? Because some of you guys are talking a big game, but you ain't putting in the effort. And if you're not putting the effort, you should just shut up because it's not going to come true. And you're going to be on your deathbed and you're going to die with regret because you're going to be like, oh man, my life wasn't what I wanted. Because you didn't show up for it. So make a decision.
Exactly. And just on the psychology of, you know, getting refusals, I play a game. No matter what I'm working on, it's like the more no's I get, the closer to a yes I'm getting. And yeah, that way, then you just go, because there's always a conversion rate, whatever it is. And then you just, and then you have something that, as a benchmark, and start, you know, reducing it and it being competitive with yourself.
Yep. Well, think about, like, if your goal is one thing, let's say it's just this one thing, but you have to go through a million no's to get there. How bad do you want it? How bad do you want it? Because that's the thing. Because some people don't want it bad enough to get told a million times. And then when they get told no 999,999 times, not realizing that they're one more no away from that yes, they quit. And that to me is so dangerous. It's like Sharon Lecter wrote 3 feet from gold. Like, you're right there. You're right there. Just keep going. Just keep being willing to keep going. Keep failing. Keep losing. Keep getting told no. Just keep going. I know my mission. I know my dreams. I know my goals. Keep telling me no. I do not care, because that's not going to stop me. And that's the thing. Don't quit, because you might be right there. Tomorrow might be the day, but it also might be 17 years from now. So how bad do you want it?
Excellent. Excellent. Listen, Michael, thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. You might let people know how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, man. Thank you. And it's been an honor. Thank you for the opportunity to be here with you today. I'm everywhere on social media at Michael Unbroken. That's everywhere. And you can check out the Think Unbroken podcast if you go over to thinkunbrokenpodcast.com or just search Think Unbroken wherever you listen to shows.
Excellent. I'll make sure I put the button, the show note, and the audio on the video. Thank you very much, Michael.
My pleasure, my friend.
So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. As mentioned, we're on BitChute on YouTube. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating. It all helps. Until next week, take care.